Welcome to ACB Radio's Main Menu Live. Opinions expressed during the show do not reflect the views of ACB Radio or the American Council of the Blind, its members, employees, or board of directors. If you would like to participate in the live show at 2 hours Universal on Wednesdays, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome again to Main Menu Live. We were unable to be here last week live due to some technical difficulties, but we're back, and this week we have our open forum. So without further ado, let's bring in my co-host, Daryl Shandro. Hello, Daryl.
Hello there. Good evening, everybody. Thank you all for listening to us.
That's right. Thank you very much, everybody. And let's see. Do you have MSN going, Daryl?
I have MSN going, so the address for that is mainmenu@acbradio.org. Go ahead and add that to your MSN contacts and chat with me.
Okay, and we have another form of communication available, more interactive, actually, than even, not really more interactive, but a way of getting information to you rather quickly. And do you want to talk to them about that, Daryl?
Yes, we are using Twitter. So, essentially, Twitter is a microblogging website. So, what we will do is we will send short notes anytime an important piece of information, such as a web.
Daryl, are you there? I think Skype is being ill-behaved tonight. Daryl, are you there? Okay, so while we're waiting for him to come back. So Twitter is basically like micro-blogging, and the basic concept here is that if we have a URL or a web address that we need to get to you, then we'll put it up on the Twitter, and these will also appear on the Main Menu blog as well. So if you'd like to watch that, in fact, there's already some content up there at www.twitter.com/mainmenu. Daryl, are you back?
Yeah.
Okay.
Did we lose? Here we go again, folks, with Skype.
Gotta love the Skype. Did we lose everybody?
We lost everybody.
Okay. Well, that's all right. We'll go ahead and give out the rest of the contact information while you're preparing to get a hold of everybody.
Sorry about that, folks.
That's quite all right. That's the way that the technology goes. Hey, Don. If you'd like to get a hold of us tonight on the phone, you can give us a call, 866-400-5333. The phone lines are open now, 866-400-5333. And let's see, I think Don's with us, and Randy and Rick are coming, and we'll wait for them. How you doing tonight, Don?
I'm doing fine. I am with you guys and everybody out there in Main Menu land. Glad you're all listening. Finally, I got Skype working. If you remember last time I was with you guys, I couldn't hear anything you all were saying, so I was just kind of jabbering away. And I think I'll make a little more sense this time because my Skype is running properly, finally.
Yeah, so, actually, it's running pretty well right now, actually.
I think I'm back.
Hello, Randy.
Uh-oh. You are. Everybody's here, I think.
Yeah, I disappeared. All right. A technical glitch, I guess.
Yeah, no. Little Skypeism, I guess.
A magician did it.
That's right. Well, tonight we have with us our pretty much normal crew, although we'll be bringing people in and out of rotation just so that they don't get sick of talking to me and Daryl. Although Don always is sick of talking to me, aren't you, Don?
Not at all.
I got to
say, you got to use that word loosely when you say normal.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
your normal crew. I don't know.
Especially Randy, right? Yeah, there you go. And but tonight we have Rick Harmon. Rick, are you here?
Yes, I am.
All right, great.
Well, and I'm never normal.
Yeah, well, you're very abnormal.
And
many of you know Rick from the Geek Zone blog and website. And Randy Knapp is here, and Don Barrett, and then myself and Daryl. And we have open forum tonight, so if anyone has any questions, then shoot them our way. We'll do our best to answer them. We had one question come in last week when it was announced that we were doing open forum, and it had to do with synchronization software, and I wanted to see if you guys, I found two pieces of software that will do this, but I wanted to get your ideas first. So basically what this person wants to do is they want to be able to synchronize folders across a network, you know, for basically two different machines. Could be that they're dialing in remotely using VPN from home to work, and they want to be able to synchronize folders. And wanted to see if you guys knew of anything. Rick, why don't you go first?
Well, unfortunately, I don't have much experience in that area, so I don't really have anything
okay.
I can...
That's fine. Now, Randy, I know you and Cliff work together quite a bit, and Cliff may know an answer to this one, but don't know if you would know or not. Do you know of anything that will do it?
No, other than the software that you told me about, and I actually haven't played with that yet, so no, I don't.
Okay. And Don?
The only synchronizing I do, how do I know about it? I can't even say it. But the only synchronizing I do is related to Outlook folders and messages from my Exchange server at work. I'm able to dial in from home and get the same inbox that I have at work, and any messages I add or delete from home are also changed automatically in my inbox at work. It's pretty cool, but I have a sense that that's not what this individual wants to know about. But it certainly is synchronization at its best, and it's one of the things that Microsoft actually has done a good job with.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we found two of them, and one of them has actually been around for quite a while, and that's FolderShare, found at foldershare.com. This is actually a product that was out for a while, and then Microsoft bought it so that they could integrate that technology into Windows Live Messenger version 8. But it's still going strong. You can still download the client. And the nice thing about this is that you can set up what are called libraries. And you can basically share files amongst users, or you can basically make yourself the owner of the folders. And so let's say that you're at home and you set up a folder structure at work. You can log onto your computer, and this thing just sits in the system tray, and it just will automatically sync whatever files are contained in the folders you've told it to. They'll come right to your machine. Now, it does take a little bit of time, but it does work. It does work quite well. The other utility is called SyncToy, SYNC Toy, version 1.4 from Microsoft, and this is a power toy. Many of you will remember things like Tweak UI and other things like that. Well, this is yet another power toy. It works both in Windows Vista and under Windows XP, and it's really meant to be used for just... It's really not meant as a library-type tool like FolderShare is, but it will work across machines and across, you know, folder structures and across networks. The later versions of it have purported to have some accessibility improvements in them, and also some usability improvements in reference to letting you know how long it will take to synchronize. If it will take quite a bit of time, it will warn you. And so those are two of them, and these are actually already up on the Twitter blog and already appearing on the main menu blog as well. So at www.twitter.com/mainmenu. So those are the two. Robert,
so do we
wanted
know
to know
anything?
What, Don?
I was just going to ask, do we know anything about the accessibility of these two programs? Have we gotten any reports in terms of one being more usable or user-friendly with a screen reader than the other?
Well, FolderShare is pretty darn accessible. There's not much to it, really. It's mainly a web interface, and then you have some dialogues to do some basic things, but not too much. I tried SyncToy when it was an older version, so I don't have any more information on it other than when I used it before, and it wasn't too bad. I think there was some system tray issues. I don't remember specifically, though. It's been quite a bit of time, but
okay.
But it wouldn't hurt to download it and give it a try. I know FolderShare for sure will work fine. I know you and I, Daryl, have used it, and you know, limitedly, and I use it quite a bit at work. For example, if I'm going to be working on stuff and I didn't bring my thumb drive, then I'll put stuff in a folder and I'll go home and flip the PC on, dial into the VPN network, and wait about, 20 minutes and my files will appear. So, yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Now, Don, you mentioned you have a new item that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, actually, it's more of a recreational item, but it is kind of a piece of technology, although I don't know if I'd call it assistive technology, but it sure helps out in exercising. It's a new fangled device I bought, and it's called a rebounder. And what it basically is, it's a mini trampoline. It was actually recommended in a book written by, all of you know, Ray Kurzweil. And, of course, aside from inventing the synthesizer and the reading machine, he's taken off on a number of other very involved scientific-related projects, one of them being the pursuit of longevity. And he wrote a book called Fantastic Voyage, which is just a superb book on how to live longer and be healthy. It's very scientifically researched and well-written. Any of you who get players that will play NLS books, it's one of the digital books that will be available to people who join the extended NLS pilot program when it comes out within the next month or so. But anyway, one of the things that Ray Kurzweil recommends in his book is regular exercise, and one of the things he recommends is this device called a soft bounce rebounder. And the reason they call it soft bounce is because other trampolines of its type have a much firmer mat and are a little bit harder on the joints and the muscles and all that. I have a problem with a treadmill because it hurts my knees and I'm kind of old and decrepit, but trying to get younger. And I wanted something that would give me the aerobic workout and be fun and at the same time have real low impact on the joints. And this mini trampoline is just awesome. One of the cool things it has for blind folks is you can buy it with a stabilizing bar, which lets you hold on to this bar as you're bouncing up and down, and so you don't jump off of it by mistake, you don't go too close to the edge. It's just a lot of fun, and it is quite aerobic, actually. I can do maybe 5-10 minutes, and then I'm kind of worn out. But it's very good exercise, and it fits right in your house, and it actually folds in half, and it'll go into a closet. So I'm having a ball.
Yeah, or under the bed or whatever.
Huh?
Will it go under a bed?
It actually has a carrying bag, so that if you want to go on a trip with it, you can throw it in the carrying bag. It weighs 25 pounds. You fold it in half, throw it in the bag, and put it in the back of a car, or even in a luggage rack on a bus, whatever, or plane, and you can take it with you anywhere.
Oh,
very
cool. Yeah.
Well, now, unless you take 57 pounds worth of clothing on the plane.
You mean like your wife does?
Oh.
No, just kidding. Just kidding. Just kidding. Although she packs a lot for the weekend anyway.
Yeah.
So, now, speaking of that, I know one of our friends, Daryl, Nikki Kobe, was looking around for a heart rate and blood pressure monitor, and kind of goes along with exercise. And I'm wondering, have any of you seen or heard anything that's up to date in reference to that?
I actually, this is Don again. I actually did an eBay search for talking heart monitor, and I've gotten quite a few hits. And I think there's a couple different ones that are sold in Australia or England, somewhere in the UK, and you can buy them through eBay. And I actually have one that I got a long time ago. It was one of these Denise Austin talking heart rate monitors. I think Peter, the guy who ran Arts Computer Products years ago, Peter Duran, he used to sell, when he had the Braille thing in Georgia, Braille Incorporated, I bought this thing from him, and it's a talking heart monitor that gives you your pulse every minute. And Denise Austin it's her voice kind of egging you on to go faster and faster and that kind of thing. But Unfortunately, those are not made anymore in this country, but I would encourage anybody who really is serious about finding one to put those, the words talking heart monitor, into an eBay search. And the way eBay works is that you can, when you do a search like that, it lasts for a year, and any time those three words come up in a product, it does an automatic scan, I guess, on a daily basis. You get an email with the results of that search and a link to the device. So it's kind of cool when you want to find products that are really difficult to get a hold of.
So there's nobody nobody like ILA or LS&S Group is selling one at this time?
Yeah, to my knowledge, no. Yeah. Last time I spoke to ILA, they wanted, you know, they wish they had, and everybody, you know, it's one of those darn things where, yeah, we wish we had one, but I wish, you know, I would give anything. That would be kind of a fun project to get Polar. As you all know, Polar is one of the biggest makers of heart rate monitors for the general population, and it would be so simple for them to add a speech chip to any of their models, and maybe we should lobby them to do that.
Well, Don, I think it's heartbreaking that they don't do it. So, all right, we we have a caller.
Perhaps they should contact Pulse Data.
Well,
Pulse. You mean HumanWare? There.
Yeah, HumanWare.
There you go. Yeah, see, it kind of everything just keeps going and going and going. Hey, I want to talk about eBay in just a minute, because there's some very interesting news coming up with eBay, and I wanted to see what anybody knows about it. But we have a caller on the line, and it's Jamie Pauls. Hey, Jamie, how's it going?
Hey, doing great. Good to hear from you guys tonight. Sounds like you're having fun there.
Yeah, we're having a load of fun. What's going on, man?
Well, I have bought more than my share of El Cheapo Walmart headset mics for my computer, and, you know, just trying to find some decent quality without breaking the bank. I actually ended up also buying an Altec Lansing 302i headset mic. It's one of those things that fit over the back of your head, which I hated, and it actually broke very shortly after I bought it.
Hmm.
And I was just kind of wondering if you guys could put your collective heads together and
puns tonight, huh?
Yeah. Kind of figure out what some really decent quality headset mics are for doing podcast quality work, whatever.
Okay. All right, we'll let you listen on the air, okay?
All right, thanks.
All right, great.
Bye.
All right, so what do you guys think? Now, I had some pretty good luck with an Altec Lansing model, but I don't like the ones that go over in the back. You know, they kind of stick out in the back. I just don't find them very comfortable.
Isn't yours the 515, Jeff?
Yeah, I think mine's
I've got one of those
515i. Goes over your head, and in fact, I'm wearing it right now, so that I can hear speech and things. And I've had really, really good luck with it. I had one break, but I mean, it lasted. Well, I'm really hard on them. First of all, I mean, I'm, you know, I use them all the time. So, how long did that one last, Darryl? What, about 18 months, 2 years?
I think so. I haven't had really good luck with that unit. I had one, and the little drivers in the earpieces will break after a while.
Well, yeah. What happened to mine was that the actual plastic on the sides broke, so it actually came apart. So yeah, that's what. What are you using, Rick?
I'm using a Plantronics Audio 350. It's a full-sized headset. It's not one of the smaller ones that people like to wear. It's you know, like out of the 80s. You know, it's a big.
Yeah, mine is two. Yeah, these are two. These like stick way out of your.
Yeah,
you know.
And it's really good. It's durable, and the quality is real good.
Yeah, that's what you're talking on now.
About $30.
We use them in our lab, and we bought a run of them for $16 a piece from a vendor, and they've held up in the. We haven't had any break in our lab in a year, and I have to tell you, the way students deal with headsets in there, hey, I didn't buy it, you know, throw it. So I think that's a good. On the other end of the spectrum, and it's just something for people who really might want to have a better listening experience. I have a pair of Sennheiser headphones that I purchased for about $80, and you could not get me to part with them.
Really?
They're very comfortable. They're very well built. They'll outlive me, and they sound really terrific.
Karen,
what's the model number, Randy?
I knew you were going to ask me that, and I'm sitting there going, but I'll get the model number for you guys, and I'll let you know.
Okay.
But
Does it have a mic, or is it just a headset?
No, it's a headset microphone. It's a full headset.
But it is. Okay.
It's about $75, and it's their high-end. It's their high-end. It's something 66.
Is that what you're talking on now?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds really good. Now, as far as headphones, Karen bought, Daryl's wife bought a really nice set of Bose headphones. What were they, Daryl? 120 or something like that?
I've never spent that much on a pair of headphones before, but man, they are good. They're made by Bose. Do you remember the model number, Karen? They're Bose noise canceling headphones.
Yeah, wait till you find out what Don spent on Bose headphones.
Yeah, $300 for the Quiet Comfort 2s.
Ouch!
The Quiet Comfort, the Quiet Comfort 3s are out now, and they're $329 or something like that. They are excellent, especially on an airplane. I mean, and the ear cups are very, very comfortable. I don't know, it's a little pricey, but
Remember, Don, you also participated in a quality control.
Yeah, he did, actually, didn't he?
With the headphone, as I recall.
The what now?
Quality control to test their durability.
Yeah, didn't you participate in their quality control department, Don?
That's right.
What really happened was I sat on them, and I actually sat on them and broke them. And when I called Bose, they said, just send them back and we'll replace them. Now, this is not an official answer, but the guy said to me, just don't say you sat on them. Say that they broke. And since they do have a lifetime warranty, he couldn't believe I sat on them, even for a blind guy, something that expensive, you know.
Oh, I believe it.
I wouldn't recommend anybody doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is not an official thing that they will replace them, but they just happen. I happened to find a nice guy there who was willing to do so. So there.
Now, those don't have a microphone on them, though, right, Don?
No,
they're strictly.
They don't.
They're strictly.
And the other
headphones.
Thing I really don't like about them, and if I had realized, I would not have bought them. When that battery goes out, which handles the noise canceling, you are also not able to use them as a standard headphone.
Oh.
So without the battery, it just goes out completely. And I think that's a poor, poor design on their part.
It would be nice if the noise canceling technology would go out.
Yeah, interesting.
Yep.
Interesting. Well, Randy, what's going on? I know that you and Cliff have had an opportunity to play with Vista quite a bit in your lab and with lots of new hardware and things. What's going on in your world?
Well, most recently we've been looking at full duplex scanners and finding that there are a range at different price points where some of these scanners are fairly close within price range. There's an Epson scanner, and I know you're going to ask me the model number, and again, I'll get back to you on this. We were just looking at it this morning. But it was under $600 and did a page every 4 seconds.
Wow.
So, and we're talking full duplex here, so I thought that was very impressive, and it's a flatbed scanner.
Should we explain to everybody what a full duplex scanner entails?
What is that?
It means that both sides of the sheet are scanned at the same time. So for those of us that have difficulty conceptualizing that there might be two sides to a page, or some of us who have orientation issues who continue to turn the page over and wind up with the same side of the page down, it solves the problem because it scans both sides of the page at the same time.
That's why you like it.
Well, yeah.
Well, hey, it solves a lot of problems. That's for darn sure.
Well, yes, it does.
Now
I've never heard of full duplex. Never heard of that before.
Very interesting. Oh. So are there less priced scanners that are of pretty good quality, Randy, that you guys have tested, or is that kind of the entry point?
Well, I think everybody loves that there's a bookhead scanner, and I can't tell you the company's name, but I was talking
about
Mike Johnson this morning. Yeah, can you, Ken?
Daryl?
Are you talking about the Optic Book, the Plus Tech Optic Book 3600?
That's the one I'm talking
about.
Yeah,
Daryl loves that thing. Daryl loves it.
Yeah, I've heard good things about that.
How much
is
that,
Daryl? They actually have one full duplex scanner, but I'm not familiar with it, so I hadn't, you know, I don't know what to tell you about it.
But the 3600 is not full duplex.
Oh, it's not.
I understand that.
Okay.
No. Okay.
That comes with the, what's the name of that? Plus Tech or Scan Plus or whatever?
It's Plus Tech, PLUSTEK.
Very cool.
And not too much else to report on the breaking news side of things. More just hammering screen readers and wishing things that would track somewhat better. I still have some issues with the way in which JAWS deals with list views in Vista.
Okay, so that
doesn't seem to be getting any better.
That wasn't fixed in the latest the actual
no.
Vista compatible release. Okay,
no.
Well,
so
So
I'm saying a prayer, and I'm going to find out if there's a God.
Now today they announced Freedom Scientific announced that Magic 11 is in public beta for those that use it. And so that probably means that JAWS 9 is probably going to be in public beta relatively soon, I would imagine. Has anyone heard, Rick, have you heard any news on that front?
No, nobody says anything to me.
Okay. I haven't heard either. We do have a... I don't know if we talked about the fact that Freedom Scientific is asking people to contact technical support if they're having issues with blank virtual buffers and crashes.
I don't know if we brought it up on Main Menu Live or not. Actually,
I don't think so. Freedom Scientific, if you have these issues and you contact tech support, they will provide you with an update, a new build.
Oh, I think we did bring
JAWS
it up
8.0.
Actually. Yeah, I think we did.
But yeah, it doesn't fix all of them.
Well, honestly, it has for me. And so this
For blank virtual buffers, it fixes virtually all, but it does not fix all of the FS Braille crashes.
I thought it worked worse on Vista myself.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
I had more of the blank page issues on Vista.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Yes, yeah. I personally have noticed that on XP, it virtually fixed all of them.
Well, that's very interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah, and this is really why they want you to contact them, because you know, they want to be able to get feedback from users and get all the issues resolved. And that's why they're not making it a public, you know, here, everybody, go download this, you know. So that's really why they want you to do that. So, I mean, for example, I haven't had any FS Braille crashes, and Daryl has. So it's – and I did before. So, you know, it all depends. And this is – you know, software is pretty darn complex, and it's important to realize that. And that's why they want to get, you know, user feedback and kind of control it, especially since they're in a 9.0 development cycle. You know, they can try to get as much of that fix as they can. So,
any news on the Ajax front where, you know,
no, and then
it was quiet.
there was a little bit of a note in their release notes which were pulled. But no, I haven't heard anything, and honestly, and of course, this is just my opinion, of course, but I honestly don't think that any of the screen readers now, Saratech has done quite a bit of work here. Honestly, I haven't done a bunch of testing with it, but until there is some standardization done within the browser, and you know, some technologies that are in place that can communicate to the assistive technology aid, similar to what IBM and Mozilla Foundation are doing, I'm not sure we're going to get a really robust solution to Ajax. But that's just my opinion. And while I get this call, Don, you had something?
Heard something very interesting today that people who were running phones with Windows Mobile 5, Feature Pack 2, and later Windows Mobile 6, Microsoft has turned off the ability to use those phones as modems.
Oh, no, isn't that interesting?
I'm not sure. Yeah, we can do some verification.
That's a little odd. That would not be a good thing.
Yeah, maybe we can do some research into that and find out more. We do have a caller. Let's bring the caller in. Hello, caller. Welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hi, this is Max in Minneapolis.
Hello, Max.
And I had one quick Yahoo story, anecdote about our beloved CAPTCHA, and then a question or a query of a direction that we might want to go at some point.
Okay, go right ahead.
Well, if we can work it both in. The Yahoo thing is very simply this. I became a Yahoo member pre-CAPTCHA. They actually weren't using it. I had it my Yahoo page, and not a big deal, but... also was grandfathered into a couple of Yahoo groups and one list and all of the mail services that they bought up, e-groups and whatnot. And suddenly one day they wanted a verification code, or they wouldn't let me in, rather. And then I sent a letter and got a human response via email, and they said, here's a verification code you can use. So I entered the verification link, and lo and behold, after that, there was yet another CAPTCHA hurdle to cross. So I sent a note to the address that had sent the verification code. I then got a canned reply saying, this issue does not actually pertain to your problem. We suggest you go to our website at Yahoo Groups, yada, 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 and solve it using the support tools provided there.
Interesting.
So I was right back where I started from.
Yeah. Vicious circle. Okay, and you had a question for us?
Well, it's a query. I'm wondering what kind of luck people are having with the various DAISY readers out there. It may not be, you know, out front state-of-the-art technology that we like to talk about. It's not whiz-bang stuff, but a lot of demands are going to be placed on digital apparatus right now, such as either the DAISY players, VictorSoft. I'm trying to get around some problems with the RFB&D version of Eclipse Reader. A lot of things that it doesn't do, such as it doesn't seem to function with my existing screen reader, which would be fine with me. And it's just not integrated like we're used to, and I think we all need to sit down with the developers and ask, is DAISY, as it's going to be implemented in the next few years, ready for prime time, and are we going to have a lot of train wrecks, particularly with the less sophisticated user who just wants a good talking book player, which has that advertised ability to jump between pages, paragraphs, and chapters.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that, and if you can, we'll let you listen on the air. All right.
Okay.
Okay. Great. Thanks, Max.
Bye.
Okay. Bye.
866-400-5333 866-400-Jeff. And well, that's a very very interesting topic. I did want to mention before we move away from that there's actually some Randy. There's some really good discussion of this whole Ajax issue in the latest FS cast, the Freedom Scientific cast, mm-hmm. that's available. Glenn Gordon actually talks very specifically to this, and it would be really interesting for you to take a listen to that. He sort of speaks directly to the same comment of, the issue of, you know, standards, and that there's these standards that are being developed and worked on and brought into fruition. So I honestly think we're a little bit away from really robust Ajax support. When I mean robust, I mean desktop-like applications. I think we're a little ways off. But you know what? Hey, who knows? I mean, it could be entirely. Oh, who knows? You know, I wouldn't be surprised at all if, you know, for example, even if JAWS 9, you know, came up with some tricks of the trade to work around some of these issues. But time will definitely tell.
I wanted to address the DAISY question though.
Okay.
And you know, as an advanced user of this stuff, I'm having a hard time getting excited about DAISY, quite frankly. I know it's, you know, I know it's good for a lot of talking book players and so on and so forth, but, you know, Daisy books, it seems Daisy books have to be created deliberately. And I think anytime you have content that's going to require a considerable amount of labor in time and energy and formatting to get all those Daisy codes in there, it's bad. What you ultimately need is, and you need this even if it's going to produce results that are maybe not 100% perfect as far as navigability, what you really need is tools that are automatic. It'll convert this content automatically. And I know there's some out there, but you know, but anytime you rely on this this extreme conversion process, it's going to result in, you know, 5% or 1% of all content being available to us. Crazy things like that.
Well, does anyone else have any comment, you know, on that?
Yeah, I've seen some really good HTML to Daisy conversions, and of course I think that's the initial basis of Daisy is HTML, XML kind of format. You know, this might be a great topic to get. I know Karen McCall was on Main Menu pretty recently, and she's a real Daisy expert. As a matter of fact, I think she teaches a whole course for the easy folks, you know, Norm Coombs and Dick Banks. She has a whole course on Daisy, and I think she'd be a real person to have maybe for a good half hour or hour discussion on where are we with Daisy, because the caller raises some good issues, and Daryl, you also raised some good issues about, you know, we've heard about Daisy for years, but really, how much is available out there in Daisy? The only real forward-moving onslaught of materials that's coming is, of course, the NLS books, which are all pleasure reading. I know RFB&D has some Daisy format, but I don't think it's as sophisticated as the digital books from NLS. And, you know, we just don't see as much material as there really is to meet all the hype we've heard about for years. And it might make for a good discussion on this show.
Absolutely.
Well, I think it, but the point was made about how it has to be built into the authoring tools. You need to be able to, you know, in the same way that there's a uniform way to say create an Adobe file for publishing, there needs to be an automatic way to create the Daisy file for publishing where it's not effort on someone's part to do it.
Well, and you know,
one of the things...
Go ahead, Randy.
The standard has to be a standard that is truly adopted.
Yeah.
You know, as long as someone say, you know, I can get an MP3 out of here quick and dirty, you know, that's a problem.
Well, there's a good...
An MP3 can be part of the standard.
There's a really good example of this with O'Reilly books. And Bookshare has a bunch of the O'Reilly books. And, you know, they also have their own online, you know, book safari, you know, where you can go and read books online. And it looks to me as though a lot of their content is very close to Daisy ready, because I don't believe, and it would, we need to probably get someone from Bookshare to really speak to this directly, but I would think it would almost have to be in some sort of an XML or SGML, which is yet another publishing standard format. So I don't know, you know, the authoring tools that are out there may be pretty darn close.
Well, and I think that, you know, I can tell you all from a user perspective, you know, that Bookshare, you can get a Daisy file, right? So what do? I yank out the HTML.
Well, but you know what, Daryl? I think a lot of that comes back from, you know, how you and I and Randy and probably Don Rick, this... You probably weren't reading books that way, you know, 20 years ago, but a lot of us did. You know, we just took ASCII text files and we read, and we did searches, and that's the way we did things. And I think a lot of that is you know, it's really difficult to move away from. You know, you kind of get used to it. I mean, wouldn't you find that to be the case, Don?
Yeah, most definitely. And I think one of the things that's going to help is this NIMAS, NIMAS, National Instructional Materials I forget what the AS
Access
stands
Center.
For, but yeah, well, it's a format. It's a standard. It's a subset of DAISY.
Right.
Yeah, Larry
it's
went
actually
there.
Actually built into the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, so that I think over the next few years, publishers are going to have to start providing accessible electronic formats in the NIMIS structure, so that they will be. It's basically a very good subset of DAISY for publishing electronic materials for school kids. So this is going to help, I think, in a lot of ways, because kids are going to start getting these materials, and then it's going to become very commonplace, one would hope.
Well, I think that's right. I think that the next generation of students and that kind of thing, they're going to rely on DAISY, you know, whereas we old farts, you know, we're probably going to rely on using the HTML version of things. Although I'll tell you, using DAISY format on the Victor Reader Stream, that's pretty nice. We have a caller. Let's bring the caller in. Hello, caller. Welcome to Main Menu Live.
Yeah, how you doing tonight, gentlemen?
We're doing great. How
hey,
can we
I
help
have
you?
I got a good technical question for all you gentlemen
right.
there.
Okay.
If you can answer, you can win a dollar. I work for an institution, all right? And we're using IE6 and with an emulator called Seagull out of Atlanta, Georgia.
Is that a 3270 emulator?
I think so.
Okay.
Couldn't quote me, but I'd say probably.
You're interfacing to a mainframe, correct?
Right.
Okay.
And basically what happens, every time I go into the emulator, I crash with even the newest version of JAWS, and I get a web-to-host caching error. Have you gentlemen ever heard about it, and is there any way to solve it?
All right.
I can do more on my job.
There you go. Okay, well, we'll answer that on the air. You can listen on the air, okay?
All right. Hey, you guys are great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, anybody have any clue on that one?
I think that's where you get your screen reader vendor and the publisher to have a little
powwow
discussion about why that's happening.
Yeah, big time.
Because it could be for a lot of reasons, but that sounds pretty major to me.
Well,
also, I would say that that would be an excellent question for the various blindness community mailing list resources like JFW-Employment or Blind Tech or one of those mailing lists. Get out there and ask a bunch of them. You have the version of JAWS you're running, the manufacturer and name and version of the terminal emulator, and the operating system you are running, and
yeah.
maybe somebody else has experienced the same thing you have and knows how to fix it.
Absolutely.
Maybe it would be nice to, either on the main menu site or the Twitter site, over the next couple of days, putting up a couple of those lists addresses so that people who have those kinds of questions, because, you know, the JFW-Employment, I've never even heard of that. It'd be nice to have a way of people, you know, knowing how to subscribe, that kind of thing.
Okay, yeah, we'll get them up there. We'll get them up there soon. All right. All right, Rick, how about you? What's going on in your world, man?
Well, I'm trying to build a new computer so I can start working more and more with Vista, especially with JAWS 9. I have high hopes.
Oh, yeah. Now let's talk about that, because Randy has been talking to me about his dream machine a little bit. And you know, I'm sort of the hardware dummy in this group. So I'll be the first one to admit that. And what are you looking at? What are you looking at building? And let's see if we can compare with what Randy's thinking.
It's a Intel dual core. It's the 2.66 gigahertz 1333 FSB. It's the newest versions of the Intel.
Wow! Yeah.
Core Duo chip.
Wow.
And I'm gonna throw 2 gig of RAM at it.
How many?
Is it E66? Is it the E6600? Is it that chip?
It's the 6750, I believe.
Wow.
6750.
Yeah, cool. See, he's already beat your computer up, Randy.
Mine's not built yet.
And mine's
not built yet either.
Daryl, you just bought one. You can't have another one. It's my turn next.
Yep.
So, okay, so
Yeah. Now this brings up a really interesting point. Do you guys really think there's been some discussion? I know Larry Skukan has mentioned it on Blind Cool Tech, and there's been some discussion elsewhere about. Do you really think that these dual core, you know, chips really give you some performance? You know, well, they give you performance, sure, but do you really think you see it in reference to your screen reader?
Yes.
You think so?
Yes, I think so.
And Rick, maybe you could speak to this, but here's a very direct area. You know, there's a lot of times where your antivirus would like to go out and, you know, they call home like ET does just to get their update about once an hour, like that's what Bitdefender does. And when I wasn't running a dual-core system, I could figure about 45 seconds where my computer was going to be unavailable while the link up to home was made, and then after that link up was done, then JAWS came back, I was happy for another hour.
The problem I had last year when I switched from my 3 gigahertz Intel Pentium 4 with hyper-threading to an Athlon.
Yep.
The same problem happened, so I switched back to the,
interesting.
Well, I noticed the same thing because for a while, Karen's computer was newer. It had the hyper-threading in it. And I would notice, be like, wow, you know, it seems like the machine is very similarly equipped, but just because of the hyper-threading ability, it's much, much, much faster. So with the dual core, you have a similar, although maybe a little bit more enhanced even, effect and
yes.
The hyper-threading capability. So, yeah, you really get, it's really is true multitasking.
Yeah, you're not, it's really nice because you actually can shut a process down and you actually think, hey, you know what, that may really shut down without bringing other things with it.
Exactly. Yeah.
So Don, what that basically means is we need to convince our wives that we have to spend $2,000 or $3,000 on the machine.
Yeah.
And as more and more programs get optimized for dual-core,
you know what mine will tell me?
Yeah, what will yours
tell
you?
Mine will tell me to go bounce on my trampoline.
Oh, that's great.
That's because you didn't say please.
Well, I think even if you said please, I think the answer would have been the same.
Yeah, doesn't make any difference.
yeah, believe me. You want to spend what on what? So, yeah, interesting. So now, how much RAM were you going to get in that machine, Rick?
2 gig.
2 gig. Okay.
And I'm going to go to 4 once I get it together, but I'm going to start with 2.
Yeah, now I'm wondering in Vista if you get more. I mean, obviously more is better, but there comes a point where, you know, you don't get as much bang for your buck, and I'm wondering.
Think the 32-bit Vista can only address 4 gig of memory. That's all it can.
4 gigabytes. Yep. That's it.
Oh, that's it, huh?
Yep.
Yeah.
Now that's for, so you'd have to go to the 64-bit versions.
Right, and then I think it can address 8, maybe, in 64. I don't remember.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. But I know then 32, it's 4 gig.
32, it's definitely 4.
I will make one other note. Have any of you guys been checking out the falling prices of hard disks?
It's crazy.
I got an ad from one of these companies. $167 for 750.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that's terabyte drives for not much over 200.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's just amazing.
So there's no excuse anymore to have, you know, full RAID level, you know, back, you know, drives in your system. There's no excuse for it, guys.
Yeah.
get a motherboard with a RAID controller on it and go to town.
Get 500 gig drives now for $100, easy.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah, Newegg, Western Digitals.
Jeez. Mm-hmm. Well, that may end up happening sooner than.
Chris said he just got a 500 gig drive.
Internal or external?
I've seen them as low as $99.
To the externals?
Yeah, that's about what I've seen.
Wow.
The externals, though?
I've
seen a few sales.
Wow, if anyone sees that, let me know. I'd love to get an external that big. Now, what are people using for imaging these days? I know that Ghost Ghost seems to be a pretty good option, but I'm wondering what other people might be.
I gave up on Ghost.
I'm using a product called NovaStore, which I really like.
So my how accessible is it?
Very.
NovaStore.
Yes.
You know where to find that?
Yeah. I think it's NovaStore. It's either NovaStore.com or NovaBack.com.
Is that the same people that used to do the NovaBack?
Yes.
Software? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
We have a caller.
So tell us. Okay.
We have a caller real quick, and I want to get him in before we run out of time. Hello, caller. Welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hi, this is Scott in San Antonio, Texas. I was wondering, Glenn Gordon made reference to Web 2.0 in his recent FS cast. I wonder if one of you could explain just exactly what Web 2.0 is.
Sure.
I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
Web 2.0, that seems to be a lot of people, I think, would like to know what Web 2.0 is. But basically, the concept of Web 2.0 is that they're wanting to bring the look and feel of the desktop to the web is basically what's going on here. So sites like Google, Yahoo, and Microsoft, they're all doing it. Gmail, you know, is of course a Web 2.0 application. Yahoo just released out of beta their email interface, their web interface, which is not very screen reader friendly, at least the version that I can't get it out of beta mode, it seems, but the version that I've seen is not too friendly. In fact, they even tell you that it's not. And of course, Microsoft's Live site is very AJAX or Web 2.0 oriented. And so basically, it's bringing the desktop look and feel to the web. And it will be interesting to see if that actually sticks around. Is it a fad or you know, what's going to end up happening here? Who knows? I think the industry as a whole is trying to figure that out. So, all right, let's get back to this imaging.
Oh, Jamie wants to make sure we don't forget about the eBay news.
Oh, yes, eBay. I'll just mention it really quickly. Has anyone else heard that eBay is going to be changing its look? Now, I saw a real quick piece of news on this, but I haven't seen much more on it. To make it look more like Amazon's new look. Has anyone heard that?
Nope.
Okay. Well, we'll keep an eye on that and we'll let you know. But I believe that's in the works. It will be interesting to see what happens with that. Okay. Let's before we end the show tonight. You had a question, Daryl, about the Nova backup.
Oh, yeah, I could not, NovaStore or NovaBack.com, just go to, parked sites with ads and things.
You
guys will have to do a little bit of Googling or something.
N-O-V-A-S-T-O-R.
Oh, well, that'll explain it.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'll tweet that.
Okay, good. Thanks, Daryl.
I just want to add quickly, I'm using Microsoft OneCare Backup. And it's very accessible. I love it.
Yeah, now I went away from it for quite a while when the virus lab reports came out and kind of gave it some really bad press. And I'm wondering if anyone else is, you know, how are you finding its antivirus capability, Don?
I have no idea, to be honest with you. I'm just accepting
whatever it does.
Everybody
right?
keeps telling me get something else, but. I love the backup feature. Maybe I'll turn off the virus, antivirus, and maybe get something else like AVG or NOD32. I keep hearing good reports on both of those.
Yeah, now my only issue with AVG, of course, is it always shows Outlook messages having attachments. And I know you can fix it, but it's kind of annoying.
I'll be right back, guys.
All right, actually
AVG
Randy,
has a bug on Vista, kind of.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, I've been noticing people have been reporting, and I've noticed it here as of late, that the email scanner reports to not be fully functional.
Oh, no, isn't that interesting?
Oh, Toonhead mentions Drive Snapshot.
Oh, no, I haven't even heard of that.
You can
Winning,
do,
which is supposed to be pretty good.
You could do backups while Windows is running.
Hmm. Okay. Well, we're almost to the end of the show. You guys got any last-minute comments here? But got just barely... what time do you have there, Daryl?
I have 2:57 Universal.
Okay. Yeah, I do not know why. Do any of you know why the stupid sync feature in the date time control panel doesn't work?
Nope.
Yeah. No.
I quit using it.
Yeah. Are you using anything for that, Rick? For synchronizing your clock?
Yeah, I'm using a program. I forget what it's called, but I gave up on the Windows one. It just never works.
Well, if you can get me that link, I would love it, and we'll get it all to you, too. Hey, before we let everybody go, and we want to thank Randy, who went away, we want to thank Randy and Don and Rick, of course, for coming tonight. Next week on Main Menu, it's this coming weekend, it's ACB Radio Interactive's birthday weekend, and we're going to be, if you've been listening to Interactive, you'll know that we're giving away a Victor Reader stream. So you want to definitely listen in for that. But on next week's Main Menu, it's going to be all about you becoming a DJ on ACB Radio Interactive. We're going to first talk about Station Playlist Studio version 4 in the first hour, and then we're going to bring on a panel of experts to talk all things mixers and encoders and all kinds of fun stuff in reference to getting on the air. So that's what's coming up next week. Well, Daryl, you got any last-minute comments?
I just got a second vote for Drive Snapshot. So if you're looking for software like that, everyone, check it out on Google.
Yeah, and I think we have all those Twittered up, don't we?
We're pretty close, yep.
All right, great. That's
we
great.
Have the mailing lists and everything in there.
Hey, there you go. Hey. All right. Go ahead, Don.
I was just going to quickly say the stream, I think, is supposed to ship mid-September. They had a glitch with the earphone jack, which is being fixed. And there's a stream list available now for the Victor Reader stream. It's very exciting. I can't wait to get it. So
yeah, it's going
to
be great stuff.
That's what I'm excited about.
All right, well, good night.
I'm going to bounce on my trampoline and listen.
All right, guys. Well, have a great week, and we'll see all of you next week on Main Menu and Main Menu Live. Good night, everybody.
If you would like to contact the Main Menu production team or panel of experts heard this evening on Main Menu Live, then simply send an email to mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. If you have suggestions for topics or you have questions that you would like to have addressed on a future edition of Main Menu Live, then email us and we'll do what we can to answer them or cover your suggested topics on a future Main Menu Live. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week on ACB Radio Mainstream for another Main Menu Live.